This is the Division 2, Division 3 podcast.
Welcome to the Division 2, Division 3 podcast. What an exciting week and weekend in D2, D3 action. I'm Matt Kinnear, joined here in Baltimore by Josh Davey, and up north from Kyle Devitt. Kyle, how are you today?
Feeling great. It's except for doing the D2 poll. That was arduous, I would say.
Yeah, arduous is a word that works for that. There's a lot of other ones as well. It's kind of, you know, throwing darts at a dartboard right now for the D2 landscape, given how crazy it's been. You know, people are posting their D1 polls on Twitter and how difficult it is. That's nothing compared to this D2 poll that myself and Kyle vote in, along with a bunch of sports information directors across the country. It's a nightmare out there right now, isn't it, Kyle?
Yeah, it's you could look at last week's poll, and you basically have to either drop five teams and move five more up and then fill the spots of the guys you dropped with, we don't know if they're good, but probably. You know, it's, I think with the D1 poll, the tendency sometimes is to overrate teams that are undefeated. And that carries over to the D2 poll in a certain extent, but you do have to look at who everyone plays, I think, a little closer, because the parity is there at D1. And it's because D2 has less teams, it's so hard to pick who's actually good and who's like in the middle of the pack. And also who is rising up, because there could be fluke results, and I think there are a couple, but by and large, there's a wild battle in the top 10. I think the first two teams are pretty cemented, and we'll talk about that. But when you get past like the top four, and you could vote anyway. There's no way to gauge who is a favorite other than, you know, Merrimack and Limestone for me.
Right. And that's the main difference that I see between the D1 and the D2 poll is, you know, there's probably five teams that are fairly established in the D1 poll right now as kind of your top handful that, you know, maybe you have one at four and one at five or whatever. But in D2, I feel like it's 1-2, and then really you can mix up from there in several ways. So it's really, really fascinating, and we're just going to get right into it with the games that happened this weekend. The one that, you know, really caught my eye is Mercy 10 over Lemoyne 7. Now, Mercy is not a program that's, you know, come out of nowhere per se. They are ranked number 15 in the coaches poll heading into this game, coached by Jordan Levine, who I'm going to talk to later on this podcast. We have an interview with him to talk about this game, but we'll analyze it a little bit on our end here. You know, Lemoyne is, to me, they're the class of Division II. They are the program that everyone strives to be, and that's including Merrimack. You know, Merrimack in many ways strived to be Lemoyne and reached that, you know, the top of the mountain last year, so to speak. But for many years, they were catching up to Lemoyne. And Mercy just, you know, in this game, they got an early lead. And the thing that really impressed me most is, as Lemoyne had its run, you know, Lemoyne had a run latter half of the second quarter into the third quarter where they scored four straight goals. And that's kind of where you usually see a team like Lemoyne, one that's very businesslike, machine-like, doesn't make mistakes. You see them start to pull away, and, you know, then it's just like, oh, this was the inevitable that we thought was going to happen. But Mercy gets four straight goals of its own right there and, you know, ends up getting the 10-7 win. You know, I watched the highlights of this game, and these Mercy guys are just tough. Bobby Chilianis, he had four goals in this game for Mercy, and he was getting beat up in this game. You know, the Lemoyne defenders were you know, some hits up pretty high. They were getting him with the stick, you know, legal stuff, but just really getting after him. And he just kept going at it. And then Ryan McSpaden is a guy who's an All-America caliber player. He just had a fantastic game as well. The two of them just play off each other in a really fascinating way. Really fun to watch that. And then, obviously, this game came down to goaltending. Lemoyne had Riley Smith between the pipes, but Mercy's goalie, Ryan Gibbons, he had 18 saves in this one. That's a recipe to beat Lemoyne. You got to be tough, and you got to make a lot of saves, and they did that, and that's going to pay off in the polls this week. Kyle, the game that you kind of, you sent me a Slack earlier in the week about, you know, Belmont Abbey, man, this team is really good. Can you tell us what they did this weekend?
They had yet another 20 goal win over a ranked team. Not 20 goal, but they beat Lemoore Ryan. And I think it was a surprising result because a lot of people were talking about Lemoore Ryan as one of the sleepers this year because they, you know, they took St. Leo to the limit last year in the playoffs. And were it not for, if you talk to Lemoore Ryan fans, a couple calls could have gone their way. They definitely could have won that game. But 21-15, Belmont Abbey wins, and they get 7 goals and an assist from Noah Haas, who's a freshman. And you pair him with Liam Osborne on attack, they've combined for 30 points so far this season.
That's incredible.
And they've played 3 games. It's nuts. It's a nutso stat line. But Haas was 7-1, had, you know, a bunch of them are made-up goals. Like, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you, but I watched a little bit of the game, and to me, Belmont Abbey just looks determined. Like, Lemoore Ryan made a late run, and I think one of the great benefits of the shot clock is the artificial manufacture of late runs for literally any team. And, you know, not to downplay what they did, but that's what happened here. And Belmont Abbey is I think, I mean, I put them at 3. And that's, like, probably a reach for a lot of people, but I think if you've seen footage of their games and how they've really just, you know, they laid the hurt on Tampa in their opener. And Tampa was number 6. You know, that's crazy for them to win that. I mean, in our poll, they were different in our preseason, but generally rated. And using our new poll going forward, I think, obviously, that's not going to be the case. But I have Belmont Abbey really high. I'm really big on this team, their work ethic, and, you know, their ability to make stops and capitalize on men up is amazing.
Yeah, Kyle, I don't think that's really a reach to put them at number 3. I haven't done my poll yet. I'm going to do it after we have this discussion here. But, you know, they're a very good team. They've been kind of knocking on that doorstep of, and you've seen that with, you know, some of these South programs that you can kind of see it coming for a few years. And then they really kind of run with it, you know, once they kind of get over that final hump. The team that I had at number 3, that a lot of people had at number 3, was Seton Hill. And I actually thought that this Seton Hill team, and I still do, you know, it's still February, so I'm not going to count them out right now. But, you know, I think this is a team that has national championship potential. And Indianapolis, now 2-0 on the season, Sean Kimble led them to a victory over Seton Hill. This was almost, in some ways, a little more of a surprising win than the Mercy over Lemoyne. And, you know, Seton Hill led for a lot of this game. You know, they were leading 7-5 in late in the third quarter. And, again, it's kind of a similar vibe to that other game of you expect these really good teams to be able to hold on to those leads. So maybe it's a little bit of the shot clock, but, you know, congrats to Coach Greg Stocks at Indianapolis and what he's been able to do. You know, he's someone who has led programs before. He had a lot of success with Lake Erie when he was there. Still relatively new at Indianapolis. But this is definitely a signature win and another example of, you know, what we talked about. This D2 landscape is crazy and a lot of fun right now. But, Kyle, before we move on to Division III, the number 2 team in the country, I think, by most people's standards, is going to be Limestone. They won 18-7 against St. Leo. St. Leo was a team that was a national runners-up last year, and Limestone just kind of pasted them. They're 3-0. I did a story on them last week about how, you know, they've had some key wins already in this season, you know, including the Lenoir Ryan win. And Coach Clark said, you know, we're not back yet, but we're getting there after that win. I think they're officially back right now. And when you look at a guy like Larson Sundown, who, what he was able to do in juniors this summer, you could see that he was going to be a special player. He had 3 goals and 3 assists. Matt Bennett is a guy. He's a senior. You know, I saw him when he was at OCC win a national championship there. He had 2 goals and an assist. He's going to be a special player. I've been waiting for him to kind of have this NCAA breakthrough. And I think through the year, you're going to see those two names a lot. And Limestone is going to be a team that is a national championship contender.
I think what's wild about this game, though, if you look at the other side of the scoreboard, Thomas Tatarian had 17 saves, and St. Leo still got beat 18-7. That's nuts. That's nuts. That means this could have been a lot worse if he didn't have basically what is a career day for, 90% of goalies.
I mean, and Limestone, they went on a 9-0 run. This is like what we expected of Limestone, you know, those 3 years prior to last year. 9 goals in a 20-minute span. That's just insane. This is what Limestone does. They score in a ton of goals. And know what is really scary for everyone? They are winning a ton of faceoffs again. Christopher Parrott, 13 of 17 at the faceoff dot. Dakota Kirsch Downs, who was their faceoff specialist last year, 9 of 12. Limestone's going to get the ball. Now they have to shoot the ball and have to score more goals than they've done before. This is a team in the shot clock era that is going to have some pretty lopsided scores. Moving on to Division III. Josh, this first game is one that's a special game in your heart. The biggest upset of the week are Sinus 13, Stevenson 9. What do you make of this?
Well, let me preface this by saying that last week you heard Kyle's pick and Matt's pick for their Sinus-Stevenson game, and not mine, because I went a little ham on picking Ursinus, and then I did a little more homework. You know, I was the one who sort of recommended, hey, we should pick this game. And, you know, I remember Ursinus maybe more for their 2017 successes rather than their 2018 shortfalls. So I was going like, oh, yeah, Ursinus is 100% going to win this game, no doubt in my mind, not realizing they were 3-11 last year. But they pulled the upset, man, and it's making me look really smart to at least you and Kyle, who are the only two who actually heard me say that. But
making you look really smart, but you know, you're a coward. You have no backbone. You didn't stand by your pick.
This is true. I can live with that. But anyway, back to this game. You know, Ursinus is under first year head coach Gary Mercadante. And to go into Stevenson, you know, at Mustang Stadium on a night game and Saturday, and get a win is pretty awesome. You know, they were down for most of this game. I believe it was 9-7 at the end of the third quarter. And they shut Stevenson out in the fourth, scoring 6 goals, pulling out the 13-9 upset. The Peter DeSimone kid, who's a senior attackman for them, is the real deal. He's like really high up in the history books for Ursinus and their program. He had 6 assists, but almost more notably, he had 5 ground balls. And that's a stat, you know, if you're looking at the stat books, that's just as important. A real gritty sort of player, a guy we definitely need to be watching out for, especially in the Centennial Conference. You know, and we alluded to it last week a little bit as well. You know, we heard some shortfalls of Stevenson, and you know, they didn't have a great fall. So you know, certainly an eye opener. And you know, this being this early in the season with some of the northern teams not playing, and not too much movement in the top 20. I think Ursinuson is going to be a name you see Wednesday when the media poll comes out as a top 20 team.
Certainly a team that's at the very least going to be getting votes, obviously, because you're a voter and it sounds like you're going to be voting for them. But, you know, that's one of the big upsets of the early part of the year. We'll see how Stevenson reacts. They've got some really, really big games coming up. You know, their schedule is just a monster. And like you said, Mustang Stadium, you know, they got the big giant Mustang head. They got the lights. They got it all. It's a very intimidating place to play. So congrats to Ursinus for being able to go in there and get it done. We go back last midweek. We had W&L double up Christopher Newport 14-7. Then that was the big game of the midweek. And then we get into this weekend. Kyle, your peeps at Coast Guard are not fans of Josh and I for our pick. Coast Guard 10, Elizabethtown 1. Made us look stupid. So congrats to them for that. But man, Kyle, holding Elizabethtown to one goal, holding any team to just one goal is a pretty remarkable feat. But it's not something you're that surprised about, are you?
No, because even visiting with these guys, it was very apparent that this is a serious team because these guys live serious lives. You know, a lot of kids go to college and you know, there's been a lot of talk of lacrosse is the job. I don't think that's true at D1. Or D3, sorry, that is true at D1 for a lot of schools, but they're on the job all the time. Like, these are guys that are, you know, in simulations of a submarine. They're running coordinates to get through a harbor in a place they've never seen with their own eyes, and it's timed and stressful, and they all eat together, and it's very, like, the entire school, not the team. It's a stressful environment, and I think that kind of steals you to be better when you're on the field, because the game really is their enjoyment. Like, a lot of the rest of their life is work, and that's important. They do important work. You know, they're a service academy, but when they get on the field, they're just ready to go already. Like, they've been looking forward to that game. You know, I talked to a bunch of their players, Anthony Weiler, Connor Ellis, and their goalie, Trey Johnson, who was phenomenal in this game. And they're just like, we can't wait to play. They just kept saying it over and over and over and over and over. And this was October. You know, it's a very unique situation there that Coach Ray LaFleur has built. And I honestly, like, I was shocked you guys picked against them. Because I just think that they are so, Trey Johnson in particular is phenomenal in cage.
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, I thought Coast Guard could certainly win this game. Don't get me wrong. But I certainly didn't think it was a 9-goal differential. I thought, you know, maybe Coast Guard wins it 10-8 or 12-10. But, you know, I thought it was more of a toss-up than this. So I was dead wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think Coast Guard upset Wesleyan last year, right? That's what they're sort of most known for, unfortunately, other than all the great things they do off the field up there. And Elizabethtown has made the NCAA tournament, you know, champions of the landmark conference the past 2 years. So, you know, you're looking at it on paper, you know, shout out to Kyle for doing a little more homework than the two of us.
Speaking of which, more on the McNair is an idiot tour. Washington College 21, Barry 12. Just got this one flat out wrong. Gettysburg 16, Messiah 11 was one of the other results from this weekend. Josh, you're incredibly high on the Bullets this year.
Yeah, I think they returned so much talent. They turned their defender, which is named Mitch Wyckoff, who I think is one of the best defenders in the country. On offense, they returned almost everything. Jack Harvey is a nominee for Midfielder of the Year. You know, when you look at this game, scoring is really spread across the board. Michael McCormick with 5-1, Jack Harvey with 4-1, a freshman, Elon Tuckman from Princeton, New Jersey, with 2-3, a couple other midfielders with, you know, 3 or 4 assists. They get 2 goals from defenders and Christian Adelies and Andrew Horn. So, again, I think there's some names on this list. You know, Tommy Heller is one of their best players. Didn't even register a point. I think there's some guys. I'm expecting big things out of Griffin Galinas, who's a transfer from Michigan, who's a freshman this year. We saw a lot of him in the Iowa Invitationals playing for primetime over the years. He's a monster. So I just think they're deep. They started Scott McMillan, who was a freshman from Conestoga High School. You know, made 8 saves, and you know, Messiah is a program that deserves a little more credit than they get. They do a great job. What's going to be interesting for Gettysburg moving forward, supposed to play Goucher today. This podcast will be coming out on Wednesday. A lot of snow forecasted in the Baltimore area, so if I had to bet, that game would probably get rescheduled. And after that, they're at Stevenson, they're at Salisbury, which will be a huge matchup, home versus Stevenson, and home versus York. So you know, while I'm high on them right now, we're certainly going to learn a lot more about Coach Janzik's team, you know, when we hit March 6th and get into the first week of March.
Looking for that elusive national championship, Coach Hank Janzik. So we're going to see. This is, you know, this is a year a lot of people have them going to that national championship game. So this next week is going to be kind of, you know, again, we keep saying it, it's still early. But this next week is probably going to show us a lot about their potential to go deep into May. A team that, you know, I thought really showed some resolve this weekend with their win was Denison. Denison 14-13 over Washington Lee. Washington Lee having quite a early season run of games that they had. They're 1-2 with losses to Denison and loss to York. I watched these highlights and incredibly impressed by Denison's ability to create momentum and go on runs. You know, every goal they had was followed by another goal a minute later. You know, they were able to just kind of, they had the snowball effect that, you know, I don't know if it's just the culture that they're able to just kind of build and feed off that energy in a really positive way. But man, every time they scored, you just felt it like, oh my God, this team's going to come down and score again. They did have to weather a run from Washington Lee. You know, WNL had 5 straight goals in the third quarter to make it a tie game, but then Denison kind of started to pull away and just get a little bit more out of the last fourth quarter there. Their defense did a really good job against WNL. You know, every shot, if you watch the highlights, is from outside the hash marks from a really low angle. Their goalie just looked like he was seeing the ball incredibly well because of where the defenders were placing those shots. And man, Peter Pitroff is one of the better players in Division III lacrosse.
Just one, you know, addition to this conversation. You know, you can't count WNL out. Last year they went 0-3 to start the season, ended up making it to essentially the Sweet 16. They score 13 goals in this game. 12 players register a point. So this team is deep. And if the fact that they're getting 12 guys on the box score in February, you know, if they can continue to develop those guys who are at the, you know, the John Brodericks and Austin Hudson, some of these other guys who are getting one goal, one assist, or, you know, some of these other players in the bottom of their roster who are only going to get better, they're going to be a team that continues to get better every week. You don't take this team lightly. Denison is an unbelievable program. But I think Washington Lee is going to be battle tested and they're going to learn a lot. Coach McCabe's going to have these guys ready to make a run, you know, into May, similar to like they did last year.
Definitely. And, you know, when you have a guy who's, you know, a player of the year type player, it's easy to think, oh, this is going to be a one man show, but that's certainly not the case of this team. Like you said, several contributors up and down that roster. Moving elsewhere, Dickinson 13, St. Mary's 10 was one of the results from this weekend. Kyle, RIT, Owu, 19-9 RIT victory representing IL North. Maybe the best team in the North. We're not sure yet. We got to wait for some of the NESCACs to get started. And then, Josh, you were at this game, Lynchburg 11, FNM 8. You took the trip up to a gorgeous stadium in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Shattuck Stadium is second to possibly Mustang Stadium. I've got a few bad memories of Mustang Stadium. So I'm going to say Shattuck Stadium is probably the nicest Division III venue there is. Sorry, I said menu. It's about lunchtime here. I'm ready to get some Chipotle. One of the nicest venues in Division III. You know, their scoreboard has like sort of live stats. They have a live camera, video constantly going over, surveying the field. So it's one of the nicest venues in Division III. This was a weird game. Lynchburg, you know, going back to the Salisbury game, has started slow in two straight games now. They went down 4-2 at the end of the first quarter, sort of weathered the storm. They were down, I want to say, like 5-4 at halftime. The game really changed in the third quarter when FNM had four essentially straight face-off violations. And obviously with the rules where on the third one, you know, it's automatic man-up. So Lynchburg got back-to-back man-up opportunities, you know, and was able to capitalize, if not within that EMO, you know, very shortly after. So Lynchburg scored a lot of goals in transition. It wasn't as much 6-on-6, but it was a lot in transition. I think I said on this podcast last week that if Lynchburg can win, you know, over 50% of the faceoffs, I think they won just over 50%. You know, they're as good as anyone in the country. So Evan Lombardo had 6 goals, a lot of them coming transition. He's a deadly, deadly shooter on the left side. Kevin Rogers is sort of leading them from the midfield. I want to talk about the Gallagher kid on defense, number 43 for Lynchburg. He is an absolute monster. And Patrick Cornelius is off to as hot as any start for any goalie in the country, making a ton of saves again this weekend. Had 11, some of them coming in really opportune opportunities. So FM is a very good team for sure. They're deep. The Malahan kid is a monster. Lynchburg really pressed out far and made things tough on him. They tried to force in the middle too much. And, you know, it's one of those games where, you know, it was really gritty. It was really physical, both kind of teams chirping each other. So it was a beautiful day. It was one of those games where I was really, really looking back on it, really glad I made the trip up to Lancaster.
Gritty is the word that was used several times in the highlight reel for Denison's win as well. That's what you need in February is some grit. Kyle, you also watched this game. You threatened Josh that you were going to jump in and talk about this game ahead of him. What did you take away from Lynchburg's win?
Yeah, I think they were really lucky to get all those violations and go met up. Because FNM, the polls for FNM were incredible. Just the way that they were able to push out the Lynchburg attackmen, especially in the first half, and a little bit kind of at the end of the game, you thought that maybe they might force a couple turnovers. Lynchburg guys made some great plays and looked back to the midfield to kind of save several possessions that were turnovers in the first half. So I think you're absolutely right about FNM being a phenomenal team. And, you know, Lynchburg capitalized on the strength of their goalie. And you kind of touched on it, but I'm going to step out and say that Patrick Cornelius is the reason they won this game. Because it could have been a lot worse in the first half going into halftime. But he made several stops to keep it close. And then, you know, he shut the door at the end, which I think is, you know, he's got the clutch gene. And I think you need that. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm as much of a believer in Lynchburg as Josh is, but I didn't go there. So I'm a little more neutral in my approach. But I think that, yeah, this was actually just a really good lacrosse game in general. And I think, you know, the faceoff thing definitely turned it and completely flipped the game. But I enjoyed watching FNM's defense a lot. I thought they were very good.
Yeah, and just looking at the stats, the man up, Lynchburg was 0 for 2 technically. So those faceoff violations were more of anything just momentum. You know, it's like, all right, we got one, then a faceoff violation. We get another one, then a faceoff. They didn't actually score within the 30 seconds or whatever the time was, but they were able to possess the ball and score, you know, as the guy's coming back in from the box, or, you know, able to hit a pipe and reset the shot clock. So, yeah, it's a big game. And, you know, we're talking about some of these schedules these teams are playing early. Every single game is a big game right now. So, you know, this is why we love the D3 life, man. This is why, you know, we're driving up an hour and a half. My wife certainly wasn't happy that we, on a beautiful Saturday, we were in the car for 3 hours, basically. But I was happy on the way home, that's for sure.
Awesome. Transition that into, well, first of all, D3 Life, go to the IL store and pick up one of the D3 Life t-shirts. You know, the more you support our coverage of D2 and D3, the more we'll do. The more you listen to this, the more you kind of buy some of that merch. You know, we'll be grateful, and we will do more coverage as we can. But let's go into staff picks. Essentially, anything that I say, pick the opposite of when you look at last week's performance. I'll start us off with Dennison Stevenson. You know, this is the one game that I think we're going to pick that, I don't know, I think we might be unanimous in this one. For all the reasons I just said about their win against WNL, Dennison is going to beat a reeling Stevenson program right now. Josh?
Totally agree. Going to go with Dennison. I think Stevenson is still looking to figure out who they are, which is fine because it's February. But I think Dennison has too many pieces put together already. So I'm going with the squad from the Midwest.
Kyle?
Yeah, let's make it a sweep and put it on the bulletin board for Stevenson. I don't know if you guys have been, your audio has been clipped for bulletin board material. You've been tripped on the internet, but I have, and it was wonderful.
And you love it.
I do. I really do.
This doesn't get any easier for Stevenson after this game against Dennison. They are at Gettysburg, against Salisbury, against Lynchburg, against Tufts, all in the span of the next few weeks. That is a deadly schedule right there.
The Mustang Classic looming the 15th and 16th weekend. You know, that's sort of the pinnacle for the D3 sport other than, you know, the Final Four. So, you know, we can talk about that at the end or when we get a little bit closer.
Yeah, those Lynchburg and York games are going to be held at the Mustang Classic, which is at Mustang Stadium and features several marquee programs. But yeah, that is quite a run for the Mustangs that they have to get through in this next few weeks here. Lynchburg-Cabrini. Cabrini, I don't know a lot about besides their win this weekend against Haverford, but I'm going to pick them solely for the fact that Josh keeps getting text messages whenever I pick against Lynchburg.
It's true.
Of people chirping at me and tell me what an idiot I am. So I'll keep going with it.
I'm going to stay with the Hornets. I've been to this game in Cabrini just because it's an easy ride from Baltimore to get up there. I'm pretty sure Cabrini has beaten Lynchburg the past few years in this game. So I think the Lynchburg's, you know, battle tested with big games under their belt in Salisbury and FNM. Cabrini not as a competitive so far. So I think this game is in Lynchburg actually as well. So I'm going to go with the Hornets.
Yeah, home field advantage and, you know, picking against Matt. Sorry, Matt. Are two of the tiebreakers here. I think Cabrini's really good. I think I have them above Lynchburg earlier when we voted for the D3 poll. But, yeah, I think I'm just going to have to heap all that praise on Patrick Cornelius and ride it all the way out until I'm wrong and I'm going with Lynchburg.
We've got Springfield versus Nazareth, some North teams getting in on the action. Two teams that we haven't seen yet this spring. So, you know, not really as much to make of them, but, you know, I'm going to go with Naz. You know, I know that Springfield is ranked a little bit better, and, you know, Naz is potentially a down year for them, but, you know, the energy of the sidelines, I see them doing the dances on the sidelines. I think they're going to get up for this one and win.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with either of these teams. I know Coach Randall is one of the best in the game, head coaching for the Flyers. So I'll go Nazareth. I think, you know, they're looking to bounce back and make a statement, get a big one early. So I'm going to go with Nazareth.
Springfield is in the same conference as my beloved Clark University. So obviously I will pick against them every single time. Naz.
Wow. Okay, we got a unanimous pick there. And then the big game of the weekend, the big game of February, potentially, Gettysburg versus Salisbury. Two teams that, you know, obviously need no introduction about who they are and what they mean to Division III lacrosse. I've kind of hemmed and hawed about this one. You know, I'm really not sure which way to go, but I'm going to say that we're going to repeat of last year in the sense that Gettysburg is going to win a close game this week, but Salisbury is going to win against Gettysburg sometime in May is my prediction.
That's a great call. I was going to say something on a similar line. So I was going to say, I think Gettysburg wins this game, but it's the loss that Salisbury needs early to say, all right, this is where we can improve a lot and get better and kind of go on the tear through the rest of the season. So I do think Gettysburg's going to win. I'm not going to say Gettysburg's going to lose to them later in the season. You know, at the same token, you know, talking about Lynchburg having some experience under their belt, Salisbury's had some, you know, bigger games already this season. Gettysburg only with one. Game is also on the Eastern Shore in Salisbury. But I think the Bullets are too deep. They have too much experience. And like I said, they're the team I'm putting on my back. I think this is their year. So might as well go with them early and often.
As much as I would love to double down on the Salisbury hatred, I think they just have too much field time right now, and I think they are riding a little bit of momentum. I like Gettysburg a lot, in particular Jack Harvey. I think he's a phenomenal athlete and a great Division III player. But I'm actually going to go with Salisbury here. I think I'm going to flip it. You can't do what they expect every time. You know what I mean? I'm going to flip it. I'm picking Salisbury.
Kyle's not allowed on the Eastern Shore of Maryland for his takes the past few weeks, but yeah, that's okay. You've got your own bodies of water up there in the Northeast. You can have.
Salisbury continues to prove everyone wrong, so you know it's not like it's a bad pick going with the Seagulls.
And then Gettysburg, you know, when we talk about these early schedules, another team that has quite a run here. You know, after they visit Salisbury, they have Stevenson and York back to back, and these are in the span of, you know, Salisbury's a week, Stevenson's a week after the Salisbury game, but then they have a quick 4-day turnaround to play York, so that's quite a schedule.
It's gonna be really cool to see all these games happen, and like I said, you put your flag in the ground the March 15th weekend or 16th, whatever it is, the Mustang Classic, where there are essentially 10 of the best teams in the country coming from the South, coming from the North, meeting in Baltimore to play each other. You know, there's so many good games before that. Like, and to your point earlier, how much these games matter, you know? If W&L doesn't turn around their season last year and beat an F&M and beat some of those teams, you know, they're not, you know, and Lynchburg wins the ODAC tournament, they don't make the NCAA tournament last year. So these games matter so much. And then with a lot of eyes being in Owings Mills, you know, like I said, at Stevenson for the Mustang Classic weekend, I mean, these games matter. And it's really cool to have some heavy-hitting matchups. You know, 2 or 3 weeks into the season, what more could you ask for? I will be fortunately and unfortunately watching from New Orleans for one of my best buddies' bachelor party, but I will certainly have the live streams up from beautiful Owings Mills, Maryland, while I stroll through Bourbon Street with an adult beverage in my hand.
That is true dedication. I had a bachelor party in New Orleans, of all places, and watching some D3 lacrosse. That's why they're paying the big bucks. Kyle, what do you got on tap for this weekend?
This weekend, I mean, in terms of Division III coverage, nothing yet. But I am going to see Yale Penn State, and I can't wait. Yale is notoriously a arduous drive, and it's actually when we did the D3 Life series, and I went to Coast Guard. I looked up how far Yale was from Coast Guard. It's basically an hour away. It's crazy. Like, the traffic in Connecticut makes little to no sense to me at all. But I will be there, but I will definitely be watching all the action on the D3 scoreboard this weekend as well.
Yeah, I'll be making the trip up to Rutgers to catch their game against Loyola on Saturday. But then kind of, you know, my habit is go cover a game, and then Saturday late night is when I really kind of watch a lot of highlights and watch a lot of anything I can get my hands on. The ones I'm really looking forward to putting on are obviously the Gettysburg-Salisbury game, and then Limestone-Mercyhurst I think is going to be a good D2 game. You know, I want to see how good Mercyhurst is. I've heard some good things about their year this year, and you know, they have a great facilities upgrade that's coming. So definitely a team to watch.
I think another one, W&L, again, you know, we talk a lot about them. They play Washington College, who just got a big win well, relatively big win over Barry. We were very high on them based on the performance against Salisbury a few weeks back. But I think that could be another great game this weekend to keep your eye on.
Awesome, guys. Everyone have a good weekend. Stay safe if you are going to be hit by some bad weather this week. And we will catch you next Wednesday on the D2D3 podcast. But first, we have our interview with Jordan Levine, head coach at Mercy College, talking about the big win against Lemoyne. Joining us on the Inside the Cross podcast is Mercy coach Jordan Levine. Coach, your team had a big win this weekend, 10-7 against number 2 Lemoyne. Obviously, Lemoyne is one of the storied programs in Division II lacrosse, but Mercy is no slouch. You guys have been putting up some good seasons as of late. Coach, how good does it feel to get this win?
It's a great feeling. Like you just mentioned, I'd say probably for the last 4 seasons, we've been kind of knocking on the door with some of those elite teams and that are nationally ranked in the top 10. So, it's great for the guys to have that, validation that, we're doing the right things and we're working hard and we're putting ourselves in position to have, a win against a program like Lemoyne, who's, probably been the most consistent and accomplished in Division II over the last 10, 20 years.
How did this game shake out for you? You guys got a 2-0 lead and kind of that must have given you some confidence going to this game. Extended out that lead, but like Lemoyne does, Lemoyne came back and was able to kind of actually take a lead midway through the third quarter. How were you guys able to kind of persevere and come back from that?
I gotta tell you, that's one of the things I'm so proud of the way our guys responded. So I guess a little backstory, a little history is, we've had so many close games the last 4 or 5 years with teams that are ranked in the top 10, and it just, we've come up short. 1 and 2 goal losses, I can't tell you how many. Really, a lot. Playoff games, too. And, I think our guys were confident. I think we've got some great senior leadership, guys that have played in those type of games and have been there before. So we had an early lead 2-0 and then up 5-2, and then, Lemoyne goes on a 4-goal run in the third quarter, and they take a 6-5 lead, and where they could have hit the panic button, and where you get maybe some of those feelings like not again. That's when our guys bared down and made plays. I mean, it's as simple as that. We did a great job defensively. Our associate head coach, Coach Carassi, had a great game plan in. Our guys executed it, and they battled on every loose ball, and made plays when the opportunity came. And I think that's how, you beat a great team like that, is just you continue to work hard and continue to make good decisions and give our guys credit. It's a game of highs and lows, and we knew they were going to go on a run, and, we kind of weathered that storm and it didn't faze us and made enough plays to win the game.
What do you think is it about this group of guys that you have that, gives you that poise and that mental toughness when, you're facing, like we've said, the team that's the class of Division II lacrosse for the past decade, and they come back at you. What maybe is different that maybe gives this team that poise to overcome that?
2 things. I think it's our senior leadership. We have 4 captains that were captains as juniors, and now they're back as seniors. That's Ryan McSpadden, Ryan Gibbons, Bobby Chilianis, and Max Littleton. And those guys have been in big games and close games and those type of situations. So I think they're, a stabilizing force for us. And it starts with them, but I think top to bottom, this is one of the most experienced teams I've had. I mean, last year, we bring back 9 of 10 starters from last year. I think it's 7 of 8 all conference guys are back. So, we have some continuity there. The guys have played in big games and it's not something they haven't seen before. And I'd also like to mention, we have probably 4 or 5 freshmen that we added to the mix that played significant minutes, and you never know how they're going to react in their first big game. And man, some of those freshmen really did. Jack Kipnis, freshman down low, made some big plays. Jack Gibbons had a goal and 2 assists from the midfield. Joe Janovy gave us good minutes at attack. Brody Guido and Jake Fitzgerald in the defensive midfield did a great job. So you never know how they're going to react until they're kind of in it, and to their credit, they played with composure, made plays, and I think that starts with our senior leadership.
And that senior leadership really played well in this game. Starting with your goalie, a career-high 19 saves against the Moines. What does Ryan Gibbons show you week in and week out in practice that you saw on the field this week?
He's a talented goaltender. You know, I think our associate head coach has done some great work with him this past season, Coach Carassi. But Ryan's just, how do I put this? There's goalies, guys that play the position, and then he's just the goaltender. I mean, he communicates well. He's athletic. He's so good in the clearing game. We're so confident when the ball's in his stick. He just kind of does everything well. And it was our game plan to, you know, obviously you need to play good defense, but we want to try to, you know, if we're going to limit those shots in tight and force them, you know, force LeMoyne to take those 10 to 12 yard shots. And we felt pretty good that our goalie would, you know, that Ryan would be able to make those stops and keep us in the game. And that's exactly what he did.
Watching the highlights, you guys have a great highlight reel of this on your website, mercyathletics.com. And one thing I was really struck by was some of the toughness. You know, LeMoyne's defense was getting after you guys. Bobby Chilianas was taking some hits. He was taking some shots, taking some sticks and some bodies, but kept going. Did you see that in this game?
Oh my gosh, yeah. That was a physically grueling game. And Bobby is as tough as they come. I mean, really. He, like you said, he was not afraid to take that extra step. And he got, you know, he took some punishment, but he took that extra step and put himself in good spots and finished. And like you said, that defense, I mean, that is one of the best defenses in the country. I don't care what division, those are grown men that, you know, are well schooled and they play physical. So, I mean, he, from day one, Bobby has been a starter since his freshman year, and he is, like I said, he's as tough as they come, and he knew it was coming, and he took the contact, and, you know, all those, you know, all four of his goals, I think he ended up on his back, but, you know, he was tough enough to make those plays.
You know, you also have an All-American on your roster in Ryan McSpaden. You know, he had a good game as well, but what can we expect from him in his senior season?
Ryan's, you know, like you said, he's a second team All-American last year, and he's just so consistent. Every game, we know what we're getting from him, and he does everything well too. I mean, he's probably our best defensive midfielder. I mean, he's a lights out shooter, and he's so quick off the dodge, where he's a threat all over the field, transition, wing lines. So, you know, it's my expectation that nothing changes. He's been a starter and a guy from day one, as a freshman. It's actually funny. He had a little bit of an adjustment because he hadn't played field lacrosse in 5 to 10 years when he got here. He was strictly a box player. So there was a little adjustment, but I mean, just from his athleticism and skill set, you know, he's as good as anyone in the country.
Jordan, I was checking out your bio, and man, I didn't realize you've been at Mercy so long now. You know, since 2008 that you've been part of the program, since 2012, you've been the head coach. How do you describe, you know, just the process of these last several years and kind of building this program to what it's become and just kind of being able to, you know, build your identity into what this program is?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a blank canvas when we got here because I started in August of 2008 and Mercy did not have a lacrosse program. So I've been here since the beginning, and it's so rewarding. And then, you know, I guess after this, you know, big win we had on Sunday against LeMoyne, just the alumni involvement and the guys that came here and helped build the program, for them to see really how far we come. And I'll be honest, I mean, we had some pretty good success early on, but, you know, it took us a while to get to the level that we're at now. I think 2015 was the first year we qualified for our conference playoffs. You know, ever since then, we've been nationally ranked each year, but, you know, starting a program from scratch and then seeing how far it's come. This was in 2017, which kind of sticks out to me, is we were playing New York Tech in the conference championship game. It was the first time we'd qualified for the ECC championship. And, you know, we're on the bus ride to Long Island, and we get there maybe 2.5 hours early just for preparation. And all the alums, I mean, so many of the alums were there. And then you look back and all those good memories with building this program from nothing and seeing those guys there still supporting and still so engaged. It was just a moment where you step back and you can feel good about, wow, you know, I guess, you know, we're doing something the right way, that these, you know, these men now that have been graduated and been out of our program are still so engaged and still so supportive. It was a pretty cool moment. And then fast forward to this year after, you know, we have the win on Sunday, and I think we might have had 20, 30 alums that were in attendance and on the field after the game, and they were just so proud to be a part of this program and to help build it and to see, you know, the success that we've had in a short amount of time.
That's fantastic, and it reminds me of your alma mater, you know, the Brotherhood of Albany guys. It seems like you guys are pretty much everywhere in the coaching ranks, and from what I understand, you guys stick together pretty well.
Yeah, it's funny, and I'm still very close with Coach Marr and Coach Thompson up at Albany, and we talk a lot, and I had a conversation with Coach Thompson. We're talking about the type of guys at Albany. I think it's very similar to the type of guys that we get at Mercy. It's blue collar guys, good sense of humor, like to roll the ball out, play fast, and just work hard and enjoy being together. So I think, you know, culture and Coach Mars, you know, my mentor in the lacrosse world, I think it's a similar culture.
Coach, congrats on the success and the big early season win. I know you guys got a lot of work to do. What's kind of next for you guys? How do you maybe not get too high after this win and keep a forward focus?
Yeah, I guess there's a certain level of expectation, and if there's some pressure, that's a privilege. That means you earn that through hard work and putting yourself in a situation to play in meaningful lacrosse games. Our approach isn't going to change, though. You know, we prepare every game the same. Our next game is Georgian Court. It actually got moved. It was supposed to be Wednesday, but some weather, they moved it to Thursday. So they're a really good team. Coach Mickey Hover's done a great job there. They just beat Southern New Hampshire. So we know we're going to have our hands full, and I think with the top five national ranking, the highest that we've ever had, that it's something, you know, new that we're dealing with. But like I said, our approach is going to be the same at its simplest form. You know, we just need to work hard and make good choices. I think, you know, we do that. You know, you put yourself in a situation to win lacrosse games.
Coach, thanks for the time and good luck moving forward.
This is the Division II, Division III podcast.